Welcome one and all to what remains of the week here on the Damage Report. It's a Friday. We get to close things out right, talking about some news, throwing away some garbage people, joined by a good bud, Brett Ehrlich, host of Happy Half Hour. Welcome back to the show.
Oh my God, it's so amazing to be here on the eve of Jordan Yule's birthday.
Is it really the eve of Jorby's birthday? That's awesome.
Jorby.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Just ripped himself into existence around this time. I don't know specifically, but everyone give him a shout out.
Yeah, Jorby, give him a shout out and then block all of that memory. Never mind. Yes, happy birthday in advance to Jorby.
Jorby time.
Yes, great. I stop everything. Like,
I feel like we need to have some kind of
we're never getting poll syndicated as to
who
on the
has
radio.
The most just perfectly rounded head, Jordan Yule or John Iadarola. Yes, he's high and tight now, but we know that's recent.
I am trying to be less rounded. Okay.
You look good, dude. Anyone who says otherwise is just taking advantage of how great a person you are.
Thank you. I make all of my choices about my appearance based on memes I've found online where guys' bodies have lines drawn on them and some are labeled cucks and some aren't. I just do whatever the not cuck is.
I haven't ever been prouder to not know what you're talking about.
It's a thing. They like will take a picture of a guy out and about. And it's like, look at this. He's leaning towards the woman. Men aren't men anymore. It's this whole thing. And I take it very seriously. Anyway,
it's like what is it called? It's like douchey encephalography. What's the one where they look at your brain?
That is what it is. Yeah.
Nazis map your head.
Shape. That's that starts with an F. It's phrenology.
Phrenology.
But yours was more scientifically accurate, I think. In any event, thank you for being here. All hail Jorby on his birthday. All hail Olivia Juliana for raising now 1.5 million plus to go towards reproductive services. Thank you, Congressman Matt Gaetz. Congressman Matt Gaetz has paid for more abortions than, well, I'm not gonna say any Republican elected official, but anyone recently. At least, so that's cool. In any event, we've got a lot that we're gonna be talking about on our show today. So thank you for joining us. We're gonna be diving into golf because I know Brett is a big fan of it. We've got some Jon Stewart. We've got AOC repping into Samuel Alito. We have good news for the midterms. It's weird, but we're gonna dive into it. And then of course, when we come back, we've got garbage to throw away. So nobody head anywhere. It's gonna be a lot of fun. Hit the like button, share the stream. If you haven't already, send us messages, we'll respond. With all that said, Brett, are you ready to dive into some golf news?
Let's deep dive into some golf news.
Let's do it.
You're so closely associated with the city of New York. Yeah. You, of all people, understand the passion surrounding 9/11. What do you say to those family members who protested earlier this week and will be doing so again on Friday?
Well, nobody's gotten to the bottom of 9/11, unfortunately, and they should have, as to the maniacs that did that horrible thing to our city, to our country, to the world. So nobody's really been there, but I can tell you that there are a lot of really great people that are out here today, and we're gonna have a lot of fun and we're gonna celebrate, and money's going to charity. A lot of money's going to charity. And you have really the best players in the world, many of the best players in the world, and soon you'll probably have all of them.
Okay, nobody's gotten to the bottom of it. Nobody's gone there. And because he has very recently, as we'll describe, come to the conclusion that Saudi Arabia bears no culpability, the government had nothing to do with it, who's to say? He is perfectly fine helping host this Saudi-backed LIV golf series at his Bedminster course this week. You know, and of course, never mind all the stuff about the MBS and assassinations of journalists and this, you know, the rampant murder of their own citizens and all of that. None of that means anything to Trump. And I realize I'm using my sarcastic voice. So I'm being very honest. He gets money and he gets to play golf. Who the hell cares about torture? Who the hell cares about murder? Who the hell cares about terrorism? He's getting the money and he gets to play the golf. Anyway, he said, I don't know much about the 9/11 families. I don't know what is the relationship to this. Well, I think it's the Saudi thing. And they're very strong feelings. And I can understand their feelings. I can't really comment on that because I don't know exactly what they're saying and what they're saying, who did what. No, I think we know who they're saying did what. Like I think it's pretty clear. You don't necessarily have to agree with it. You might think that it's leaving out certain things or whatever, But you definitely know what the issues of the families of those who died on 9/11 is with you golfing in this Saudi-backed golf thing. You disagree with it, but to pretend ignorance in this case is so pathetic, Brett. What do you think?
I love when someone says someone should have gotten to the bottom of this when they were the president of the United States. Like, you had every opportunity for 4 years to get to the bottom of this. And there was, you know, Obama. I remind everybody, Obama didn't get, whether he got to the bottom of this or not, there are FBI reports that just haven't seen the light of day. Why? Because of obvious reasons that are not too dissimilar to why people play in the Saudi Arabian LIV tour. It's the money, Lebowski.
100%.
Like, you think that golfers can't dance? Watch them, just ask them why they're playing for the Saudi Arabia tour. Like, they'll be like, I just think it's a golf tournament. And they're trying to dance around the concept that they'll avoid saying, which is they're doing it for the money. Like, there was in 2020 a moment when Bill Barr basically jumped in front of the bullet jumped in front of a report that was about to be distributed to the members, to the 9/11 families. They got to see some of the allegations that tied theoretically the Saudi government to the attack on 9/11. And all of their justification for not sharing it was like, well, if it really was serious, we'd totally tell you. Yeah, but the answer is, with the Gulf, it's the money. And with Saudi Arabia in general, it's the oil. And the only way to make it so we don't have to be such strange bedfellows with the Saudis is to not rely on foreign oil. And I think the dominant strategy in all of this is to have a pathway to not rely on oil at all.
I think that would be great. You know what? I plan to start advocating for that here on the Damage Report. But yeah, you're totally right. And I know some conservatives might be watching this and thinking, okay, so you have an issue with him golfing and the Saudi thing. Well, what about Biden's trip to Saudi Arabia? And to that, I would say, yeah, we talked about that too, actually. Do you watch the show? No, we criticized him for that. It's awful. And it was for the same reasons, actually. They are all doing it for the same terrible, amoral, at best, I would say immoral reasons. Now, that said, I do want to get to Trump talking a little bit more about Saudi Arabia. Here, let's jump into that video.
I've known these people for a long time in Saudi Arabia, and they've been friends of mine for a long time. They've invested in many American companies. They own big percentages of many, many American companies. And frankly, what they're doing for golf is so great. What they're doing for the players is so great. The salaries are going to go way up. The PGA was not loved by a lot of the players, as you know.
Okay, they're friends of his. I mean, he's being honest. They're friends of his. They've given him money. They've invested his business, whatever. And then he says the thing about them owning many corporations here, which, okay, I mean, look, I'm sure there's pros and cons, but like, don't you guys pretend to have an issue with like other countries or businesses for other countries swooping in and buying up a bunch of stuff? Oh, in this case, it's not a problem because you've made money off of that. Okay, I see. Well, that's fair at least. What's interesting is that Trump has been like his statements about who's to say about 9/11. It swings so far in one direction, but he has gone in the other direction too. So back during his 2016 presidential run, Trump fought against the Republican Party's insistence that the attacks were orchestrated by Al-Qaeda, telling his supporters, quote, "It wasn't the Iraqis that knocked down the World Trade Center. You may find it's the Saudis, okay?" Although in his defense, he did say "you may find." I guess he looked into it and nobody's been able to figure it out at this point. But he was perfectly willing just 6 years ago, many, many years after 9/11, to say, yeah, it was obviously much more in that direction than in Iraq. But yeah, no, in this case, I guess he's making more money now. And so suddenly his opinions have changed, Brett.
It's so like he's saying, I'm not going to be ethical because they're my friends. It's 100%. Like, well, listen, I would go after the mafia for all their crimes, but they throw sick parties, man. Like, let me just tell you something about Sultanates, Emirates, and kingdoms of Saudi Arabia at all, basically oil producing countries and golf. Like, I have a friend who was a professional golfer, and they would fly her out to Dubai, to Saudi Arabia, put her in like a room on a plane with a bed in it.
Wow.
Like a full on suite. And just throw these elaborate parties with all of the golf, because they're just pulling cash out of the ground and into their pockets. and they just do whatever they want with it. And that's, and that really sums up how Saudi Arabia is geopolitically. They have the oil and they have the relationships, the best relationships money can buy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those relationships end up being personally friendships with the United States of America's president, or just grabbing them by the short and curlies during a recession, you know, preamble to a recession or a giant gas price hike, because you got to. And everybody acting in their best interests for like larger goals are going to be quite unethical if that's the dynamic, because you're relying on their oil.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, look, like I said, you know, Biden's, you know, the recent Biden stuff is far worse substantively. But this is a preview of, you know, if Trump comes back in, what are we going to get? It's a continuation of the status quo with Saudi Arabia. And for all the damage that that's going to do to the climate, to the people of Yemen, I generally think that the idea that both of the parties are exactly the same is a massive oversimplification. But on this issue, not exactly the same, but in the same ballpark, on the same course, I would say. Can we just we jump into something incredibly shallow for just a second? It's a Friday show. I'm allowed. It's in the charter. We're gonna go to graphic 5 in a sec. So I love when people are exposed for what they are, and usually that happens through actions or statements. So, you know, the video of Josh Hawley running away after pretending to be a tough guy and all that. Like, I like that. Ted Cruz wants to be a tough guy, flees to Cancun when it gets a little bit cold and all that. Trump was exposed. This is on a more shallow level. Can we go to this photo? It's, look, now that's a little bit mean by Daniel. That's a photo of Trump out on a hot golf course without, you know, an inch thick layer of bronzer. That's just what Trump looks like. That's what a man of his age, you know, and his lifestyle and shape looks like. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But he thinks that there is, which is why you only get an appearance of that once every like 3 years or whatever. And I think we need to be far more real about what our politicians are. Now, I get, like, it seems like, well, this is his face. Like, who cares if he uses bronze or whatever? No, but they have a very specific idea of who he is, an idealized version of him as this strong, confident alpha person. And they miss so many of the flaws and imperfections, and the most significant ones have nothing to do with his pores or whatever, or his pallid skin tone or anything like that. But why can't we be more real about who these people are? Like, nobody's following Bernie Sanders because, like, that dude's got abs, you know? Like, I feel like we should be able to be real. And there's so much that goes into his public persona. And it's interesting when you just get a little bit of a veil into, no, he's a guy in his late 70s. That's what a guy in his late 70s looks like, Brett.
Yeah, I mean, because he doesn't have bronzer on because he has to have, he hasn't discovered tinted moisturizer, bro. Get with the times. Like, I'm sure your makeup artist, oh, yeah. That's what they do when you work on a real television show.
Should we be like, you know, Mediterranean gods?
Dude, when I found out about it, I was like, yo, Michelle, put more of that stuff on my face. I look gorgeous.
Can I get some of this?
Yeah, we can get, everyone, the hype train's at level one right now. If it reaches level 5, I will present John with some tinted bronze.
And by the way, some of you might be thinking, well, wait, isn't this hypocritical? You were just saying he shouldn't do it. First of all, I'm not saying that. I'm saying we should be real about them. He can do whatever the hell he wants. And second of all, no, he's in elected office. I'm just a YouTuber. I can do whatever I want.
No, but like, this is what he looks like. And Michael Knowles tweeted the other day, like a photo of like Trump or Biden being propped up by Xi Jinping. And then there was, or like, I forget who it was. And then there was, he was like trying to box with a photo of Trump, like Rocky Balboa. Mm-hmm. And it's like, bro, you realize you're photoshopping your own dude in this too.
Yes.
It's such a weird thing. He is the blob. He is, for those of you who read Ayn Rand, he is like the reality of what that ethos yields in someone. Like the Howard Rourke or whoever with the golden hair is actually just a tub that's like Pizza the Hut or Nosferatu.
Let's have a little bit of golf fun, Brett. Galt. I've got John this Galt. For you. Okay, Galt, John Galt, yeah. I read that. God, that was long. Dude gave a like 70-page monologue. in a book that was witchful. Anyway, okay, we're gonna jump in this, and I'm gonna get your opinion on Gaul. Okay, can we go to this? We're gonna go to video four, the reset for Fox and Friends.
Yeah, Donald Trump is playing in the pro-am today with Bryson DeChambeau and I believe Dustin Johnson. I don't know who's gonna close out that.
Is he a scratch golfer? He is, right?
They're all good golfers.
I know he's the greatest golfing president ever.
Really? Athletic.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. I thought for a second we lived in North Korea. It's the greatest ever. Athletic. True God. But anyway, we've occasionally wondered about the relationship between Fox and Friends and Trump. Are they starting to get a little bit of distance? Are they starting to move towards DeSantis? They might be prepping the way, but they are also very sensitive to his hissy fits. He had one recently because of some polls that they read. And so they're trying to lure him back in only the most shallow and guaranteed to work fashion. Just say that he's athletic, say that he's a great golfer. But I wanna actually dive into it. You know, it's a Friday, let's have some fun. How was he at golfing in that Saudi backed fundraiser, whatever thing that he was doing? Well, we have some news from the scene. Trump's opening drive bounded into the left rough, but it was a respectable distance from the tee for a 76-year-old, roughly 220 yards. Really fast, Brett. I am not a golfer. 220 yards, that is impressive, correct?
Not really. I mean, I hit the ball like 235, like maybe 240.
You're not 70.
So the thing about Donald Trump is he's got one of those old man swings. Like I played a lot of golf. You're looking at a guy who's like number 7 in the Mission League in high school. So I know what I'm talking about. But yeah, he can move his back still and he can swing the club and he hits the ball in. He's a good golfer.
Okay.
By all accounts. And he's 70 years old. But yeah, and I hit it 230 and I'll play with people and they'll just freaking fly right by me. Random like Timmies will hit it past me. Like it's more the short game that makes me the expert I am.
Okay, it is. And we're going to play against Trump at some point. No, so I want to give you some more details before we get your reaction. So overall, the personality has to come through and it does in the same way as when hanging out with world leaders. Take a look at this. After hitting a second shot to the green, Trump ignored other players in his group who had yet to hit and jumped into his cart and roared ahead. He parked within a few feet of the putting surface. Apparently that's a no-no because it could damage the short grass in that area. Standing in the fairway half a hole behind Trump, Dustin Johnson yelled ahead since he had yet to play a second shot and could have beamed the former president near the green. In the future, I'm not great on etiquette for golf, but don't feel like you have to give the warning. Anyway, he had also not finished a hole after his blast from a bunker failed to reach the green and was in some nasty rough. He had his caddy pick up the ball and march to the next tee. He was just done. He didn't play anymore. On another hole, when a birdie putt rolled nearly 6 feet past the hole, he scooped the ball up to end the hole, conceding himself a par. It was just up to him. At other times, a Trump miss hit would simply be ignored. As if understanding the drill, his caddy would retrieve the golf ball from the sand or deep rough and walk forward. It does sound fun to play that way. No consequences, like with the DOJ.
That sums up everything you need to know about the guy. And they tell, you know, if you play golf, they're like, you know a lot about, you get to know someone very well by playing golf with them. Whether they cheat, whether they hate themselves, whether they're relaxed, whether they can hang out and have a nice conversation, drink a few beers while you're playing. But Donald Trump, we didn't learn anything. We knew all this about him. He's a giant man baby who messes up. And whenever when he hits a good shot, he pretends that's how he always plays. And when he hits a bad shot, he pretends it never happened. Yeah. And that's consistent with something I think everybody should go watch. There's a real time clip from like 2018 where Billy Bush says, yeah, Trump literally took me aside and said, just say whatever you want, they'll believe it. And that's what it comes down to on his scorecard. Yeah. I guarantee you.
Yeah. No, it's sad, you know, because I'm sure he would love to actually be great. He can't necessarily be as great as like me. Like I'm actually ranked top 10 tennis in California for all ages and all groups. Most people don't know that, but you can look it up and it's not there yet, but you should put it there and then other people find it when you do. So anyway, I have no doubt that he would beat me. Much more interesting question of how he would do going up against Brett. Perhaps we can make that happen at some point. In any event, we hit level 5, so we gotta get that bronzer. All I wanna do is common room. We could talk about the MCU and stuff. It'll be fun. Come on.
I'm down.
Let's do that instead. Politics, not a fan. Honestly, not a fan. Okay, with that said, we need to jump into something very significant. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with the basic idea that the GOP was so incensed by the fact that Manchin and Schumer have got this new infrastructure bill. They decided they're just gonna block everything. They wanted to try to block the billions of dollars that are going to the semiconductors, and they apparently failed in that. They also wanted to ban a bill that they had basically all supported to give money to vets who are suffering from respiratory illnesses and cancer. John Stewart, who's been working on this for years, went off in response to that. And so we want to jump into a little bit of a mashup of some of his appearances over the last day.
This is an embarrassment to the Senate, to the country, to the founders, and all that they profess to hold dear. And if this is America first, then America is
They don't support the troops, they support the war machine. And that's gotta stop. The value in the US military isn't in the toys. It's not in the hardware, it's not in the tanks. It's in the men and women. And until they start supporting them in the manner that they purport to online,
yep,
they are hypocrites.
It is
the most despicable part of this whole thing is watching on the Senate floor, Ted Cruz fist bumping and then patting each other on the back when they blocked this bill. Josh Hawley and Pat Toomey celebrating their victory over veterans with cancer. Way to go, guys. You finally handed it to big veteran with cancer. Well done.
They're never going to hear this. There's an information silo. I was lucky enough to be able to get a hold of Newsmax this morning and go on there. Might have been the first time those viewers had ever heard about it. Fox News, they've refused to put me on all day.
Now he tried, and by the way, he got on Newsmax. One of those clips was from Newsmax, and he really delivered stuff that, as he pointed out, they probably never hear. He was on CNN and MSNBC. He was doing live appearances, speeches outside of the Capitol, and he brought up one extra point there. It's not just that they blocked this bill. And we're gonna talk more about that. The celebration, they were so proud of themselves to screw over vets with cancer. Take a look at how they celebrated. Yeah, it's fun, we really got them. We got them, we supported it in the past, both of us. We were perfectly fine with that bill in the past. And we love to pretend that we wanna support the troops, but I don't like that they want to do something totally unrelated when it comes to climate change. So, screw them. You know, if they suffer and die, if they can't get the treatment they need, whatever. I want to score some cheap political points here. Yeah, Brett, they're just the coolest guys.
You know, seldom in history do you really get to see a boundary being pushed this far, and I almost respect it. Where like the Congress, the Republicans in Congress are like, will anything we do matter ever? Mm-hmm. And can we test that by denying care to veterans with cancers that resulted from being near burn pits? That was like the norm. And the amount of money that goes into the pockets of the CEOs of private companies that are that get those military contracts eclipses that which would care for these people. And this isn't the first time that John Stewart has to like leap into action to remind Republicans that they can get easy wins if they like support the troops and first responders, because he had to do this same kind of thing to get ongoing medical care for first responders to 9/11. Ever since Donald Trump told Gold Star families that they sucked and that they and gave them COVID, everyone's just like, oh, I guess nothing matters at all. And it takes John Stewart, a voice that we all kind of miss, to get back out in front of it and say, by the way, these guys are cowards. They're horrible.
Yeah.
This is what killed Bo Biden.
Yeah, 100%.
Where's Joe? Get it going with his buddies.
Exactly. Yeah. This we need a strong Republican Party that sticks it to the vets who are suffering. On Monday, we did a top 10 list, Francesca and I, and it was the top 10 sayings that we're just sick of. And one of mine was, it was my historic throwback. It was support the troops. And then this is what they do. No, they don't. It's convenient. Support sending them out to do whatever it is that we want. And then as soon as they come back, whatever. I guess they're not troops anymore. They're troops while they're being shot at, while they're shooting people. As soon as they come back, when they're sick, when they want an education, when they want to be able to afford housing, then screw them. We're not interested anymore. And it couldn't be any more clear. Right now, as we speak, there are vets that are doing a sit-in at the Capitol. And they say that they're going to stay there as long as they need to. I hope that it works. I assume that the amount of coverage that Jon Stewart is getting is going to make it untenable for them to block this for much longer. By the way, after pointing out that Fox had refused him asking to come on, they did have him on this morning. Now, when he tried to bring up the fist bump, they kept cutting him off. So they're still very sensitive about this making the Republicans look bad. And even in that, Bill Hemmer was like, well, I mean, everybody knows that it's eventually going to pass. But do you get, Bill Hemmer, why that's worse? Like, it's really bad to actually block it to hurt the vets. But to just like have a little bit of fun and tease blocking it, knowing that it's going to pass anyway, you couldn't be treating them more like a piece on a chessboard than you are at that point.
And if you want to see the full version of his speech outside Congress, you can watch, go to TYT Investigates either today, like probably later today, it'll be up. YouTube.com/TYT Investigates Reports, because he also calls out like Rick Scott for saying, oh, I was so proud to put together a care package for these people, the veterans. And it's like, oh, I'm glad they got your M&Ms.
Yep.
And your like wet
moist
wipes.
Towelettes.
Yeah. Like, neat. How about healthcare in a country? Like, for all the MAGA crowd, like, if you want to make America great again, like the GI Bill, for half of the GIs, it invested in their lives after they got back from the stuff we forced them to do.
Yeah. 100%.
You know, and I know we enlist now, but they're still getting sent some really awful places based on bad promises and bad faith, basically promises, and you have to deliver your end of the bargain. And they're not, they're just not.
Yeah, and you're not obligated by law to serve, but let's keep it real. When they've made it like the wages haven't kept up with inflation for literally decades, and that's a place where you can get paid, and they come to your school to try to bring you in, they're waiting at the mall, they're waiting everywhere to try to recruit you. It is voluntary, mostly. AOC had some understandably harsh words for Samuel Alito's recent speech about why foreign leaders who think Roe v. Wade being overturned is a bad thing should really just stay out of our business. In case you didn't see it, I want to give you a bit of what Alito had to say.
I had the honor this term of writing, I think, the only Supreme Court decision in the history of that institution that has been lambasted by a whole string of foreign leaders who felt perfectly fine commenting on American law. One of these was former Prime Minister Boris Johnson, but he paid the price. Post hoc ergo propter hoc, right? But others are still in office. President Macron and Prime Minister Trudeau, I believe, are too. But what really wounded me was when the Duke of Sussex addressed the United Nations and seemed to compare the decision, whose name may not be spoken, with the Russian attack on Ukraine.
He's just having fun mocking. Remember, he's nonpartisan, non-ideological. He just reads the Constitution and interprets it, analyzing it using the divine calculus of the law. It has nothing to do with politics, except that like he loves to mock world leaders on the other side who have an issue with this. As he talks about how great it was that he did it and how necessary it was to get rid of Roe v. Wade. He's very confident and very open about his view on it now. Not necessarily so much back when he was trying to be confirmed there. You'd think, why isn't he bragging about how, if you put me on the court, I'm going to do this? He believes it's definitely necessary. There's nothing wrong with it. Then why at that point did he say, Roe v. Wade is an important precedent in the Supreme Court. It's been decided in 1973, so it's been on the book for a long time. It's a precedent that has now been on the books for several decades. It has been challenged, it has been reaffirmed, but it is an issue that is involved in litigation now at all levels. Weird how he was being so squirrely at that point, but now he's out. He's out and enthusiastic about this. The whole nonpartisan thing is long gone. And thankfully, Representative AOC is pointing out how big of an issue that is for the legitimacy of the court, tweeting, "Remember, it was Alito's opinion that leaked, and some are now thinking that maybe it was done to try to get John Roberts, who was considering maybe trying to get some people to flip, to fall in line." She says that fact, paired with his politicized remarks below, should be alarming to anyone. The Supreme Court is in a legitimacy crisis. Chief Justice Roberts has a responsibility to share the progress and results of SCOTUS's leak investigation. I am predicting that we will never find out why exactly that was leaked. The right pretended to care when they thought the leak coming out made it less likely that Roe v. Wade would be overturned. Once it was overturned, suddenly you'll notice they don't care anymore about who leaked that. Anyway, we need far more than that. We need reform on the Supreme Court, and there is a plan to do that. We're gonna get the details in a minute. But Brett, what do you make of Samuel Alito?
Samuel Alito killed Antonin Scalia. That's my take after this, because he's like, no, I'm the cheeky twat on the bench. Like, that's it. Because if you read Antonin Scalia, it's just like that. All his things are like, I'm so clever. You know, ergo hoc, ergo propter hoc, which he's joking about how his own argument doesn't make sense logically. He's like, it happened after, so that's why it happened. That's that joke. It's like, oh, this is a fallacy I just said. I just want to take this opportunity to tell people that there's this weird talking point that says people who want to find some kind of justification to say that the Supreme Court isn't an extremely fundamentalist Christian court now. Mm-hmm. They keep saying, you know, the fundamental concept of the constitutional justification for Roe v. Wade was not good. It was actually pretty weak. No. It is the only way that this kind of thing can happen. There is, besides passing a specific constitutional amendment that says abortion, cool, okay, let's do it. You need to be guaranteed certain rights as an American. And the right to control your own body is so intuitively in that by virtue of at least two amendments to the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
That's it. And then to tell you how extreme the Republicans on the bench have become, Roe versus Wade was decided and voted for 7-2. 5 of those votes were Supreme Court justices appointed by Republicans.
Yeah, that's amazing.
There were 2 that voted against. One was by Kennedy, the other was Rehnquist. So a 7-2 decision. They said, you know who should be the next Supreme Court Chief Justice? The whack job who voted against this. Mm-hmm. Rehnquist. It became the Rehnquist Court. And then they started packing it with religious fundamentalists who eventually would overturn something that 5 Republican appointed Supreme Court justices voted for. That's how psychotic they are now. And anyone who pretends that the Republicans have gotten more moderate and the Democrats have gotten more left, let me just remind you, the New Deal, Social Security, the left used to be way more left. Now they're like, I don't want to touch anything. Let's go for small government and neoliberalism. Mm-hmm. Like, check your facts, morons.
Or the Democrats at the very least, yes, right. 100%. Yeah, now look, she's saying we need the investigation. We obviously do. We also need reform. Now there is a plan, you know, with the state of the Senate, it's not gonna happen. But there are 7 House Democrats who introduced a bill to seek to end lifetime service on the Supreme Court. Here's what they would set up. And it's described in great detail in an old episode of John Oliver. The proposal would create a much faster rotation of justices in 2 ways, by guaranteeing 2 new appointments in each presidency and creating absolute term limits of 18 years. Under the proposal, new appointments to the court no longer come only when a justice dies. Instead, each president would get the same number, 2 per term, in their first and third years of office. Existing justices would leave the court in the order they joined. Per the bill, they would keep their pay and status, but no longer actively serve unless another justice was incapacitated. There is no argument not to do something like this, other than we think that it benefits us to keep it the way it is right now. If it didn't, maybe the Republicans would be on board, but they got a bunch of young justices on the court and they want to keep that. This is obviously better. It avoids the chaos of well, oh God, is someone gonna die finally? Is someone gonna, no, you just, if you win a presidential election, you get two. You don't get to radically remake the core. This isn't, you know, endlessly adding new people of every single term. This is two. And if you win both terms, you don't even necessarily get the majority for winning two terms back to back. You'd get four at that point. But if you kept winning presidential election after presidential election, in theory, you should have a strong impact on the court. Seems perfectly reasonable. We've reached out to some of the sponsors of it to see about getting them on. Of course, it's not going to happen because it's common sense.
It's super not common sense to me. I think that's a very weak, a horrible idea.
Okay, well, I would love to debate it in detail at some point. But if you have any really fast point.
While the Electoral College still exists, while the Senate overrepresents horrible people, while skews Republican by design, and there's a better precedential justification for expanding the court than there is for something like that, because the last time the court expanded, it was relative to total number of districts in America, and we should do the same right now.
Yeah, I just think that expanding the court and making no other reforms still makes us, the parties are incentivized to seek out potentially unexperienced people purely based on their youth. I think it puts way too much of the onus on when they're gonna retire and political determination of retirement time. And I think there's a lot of potential benefits to this. Anyway, we should have that debate at some point. Anyway, with that said, I just want to briefly mention, because I don't want too much time to go by. Candace Lynn gifted 5 subs over on Twitch. That makes 11. Thank you, Candace Lynn. One Savage Gentleman gifted 5, has given 45. Thank you so much. Brandy Lou 2 gifted 5 as well, has gifted 820 subs on Twitch. We have such an amazing community. Thank you to all of you. And with that, let's jump into some numbers. I really should have saved this for Anna Kasparian. I know she loves poll stuff, but you can come to me. The midterms are gonna be an absolute bloodbath for the Democrats, right? Maybe, they might be, but it's actually looking a little bit better for them now than it has for many, many months. Take a look at some of the evidence. First of all, I wanna go to Simon Rosenberg, who acknowledges that in the 538 congressional generic aggregate, it's moved 2.5 points towards the Democrats in recent weeks. The Republicans are only up 0.2. He believes that this they get the data day by day. They think it's gonna flip to Democrats soon. And in the NDN assessment of a number of different polls that just came out this week, they say the race has moved 4 to 5 points towards Democrats in recent weeks. The anti-MAGA majority has been awakened, perhaps by gas prices going down, perhaps by things like the Roe v. Wade decision. Votes on contraception and same-sex marriage and all that. They say the Senate is leaning Dem, chances of keeping the House rising, lots of signs of GOP underperformance now. And I've actually gone and collected a lot of evidence of that that we'll get to. Landscape is likely to get worse for GOP in coming months with things like the debates and stuff. Democratic candidates have a huge cash advantage heading into the final 4 months. So look, I know a lot of Democrats, when it was projected that Roe v. Wade was gonna be destroyed, were like, yes, that means we can raise some money and they might vote for us. And that was reprehensible because you're supposed to stop it from happening and protect people's rights. But they didn't. So, we're in the bed that they made. And it does seem to be playing out on the other side, though. They are raising the money and the polls are moving towards them. So I don't know, bro. What do you think?
A lot of this is the who sucks worse question.
Yeah.
A lot of it is like, all right, so who do you think is more sucky? And the truth is that right now Republicans seem to suck, and a Democratic approach of doing these hearings and letting the people, the like normies in suburbia, know that Donald Trump is a psychopath who tried to orchestrate a coup, that's working. And this is the kind of thing that it used to be conventional knowledge in politics that going negative and being toxic basically polarizes and shrinks the electorate. You turn off a lot of people in the middle. But for a while, Donald Trump's vitriol and toxicity actually galvanized a really crummy base that was like, yes, I also hate people in politics the same way. But what this is doing is, I think, there's plenty of people who just had a general disrespect for politicians And the longer that Trump has and his kind have been in the discussion, and actually the more that like the conventional politicians, the Marco Rubios, the Matt Gaetzes gravitate toward that ethos, the more that conventional politics is normal and insiderism is a synonym for MAGA.
Yeah.
And that's how the Republican Party is. And there's a lot of people who are like, actually, no, I am being polarized and the electorate is shrinking. And go ahead.
Well, it's, you know, before it might have been that you'd have one bad politician and a scandal, but so many of them are generating things that I think turn off a lot of regular people on it. And they're competing with each other to do that. They desperately want to effectively produce this, whether they know it or not. It might be in their own individual interests. But in any event, it really does seem to be shifting. Ryan Grimm responded to this saying, it will be interesting to see what passage of the climate bill, if it happens, does to these numbers. That certainly couldn't hurt. Gas prices continuing to go down, perhaps. Legalize weed next and you hold the House and the Senate. He's like somewhat joking there, but maybe cancel student loan debt, make it so that people's ACA premiums don't immediately rise. All of this sounds like good stuff. And even before that, take a look at some of the individual polls generating the meta narrative we're talking about. In Arizona, Mark Kelly's up 12 points over one of the potential Republicans, 10 points over the other. Arizona governor's race, Democratic nominee Hobbs up 9 points over Kerry Lake, one of legitimately the craziest people in the country, 8 points over another. So that's all good. In the Georgia Senate race, Raphael Warnock is up 5 points over Herschel Walker. It should not be that close, but he is up by 5 points. However, Brian Kemp is up 8 points over Stacey Abrams. So those numbers need to shift. In the Pennsylvania Senate race, Fetterman is up 11 points over Dr. Oz. Which actually, that's overperforming for Dr. Oz. Remember, he doesn't even live there. And in the governor's race, the Democrat is up over Mastriano, is a legitimately crazy person too. But there's a 13-point gap there. So look, that's one poll across these. That's not determinative, but this is certainly good. And there's so much they could do to earn even better performance.
Yeah. So when you were saying the debates are around the corner, typically in politics, debates, seeing two people on stage at the same time, it shrinks the gap between them. It just does. Some of the reasoning is that's been put forward is, you know, you get to see these two people and it reminds you of the qualities that you might have looked for in your own party. And there could be a gaffe or whatever. But that only really, in my opinion, in analysis, applies to when you have politicians who know what they're doing, who have gone through this like politician finishing school. And when you have people like Dr. Oz, who's just like a crappy, weak, floppy, no bones in his arms TV show host, like, and he's gonna go up against this imposing dude and fighter in Fetterman, who might wear shorts to the debate, and everyone in Pennsylvania is like, you know what you're doing, downtown. So that's gonna happen. And you have Herschel Walker, who is going to get annihilated because he can't put a sentence together and gets embarrassed with softball. He's whiffing softballs on Fox News. Like, yeah, it doesn't look good for them. They got what they thought they wanted on the Republican side, and God willing, it backfires.
Yeah, God willing. 5 points, though. I mean, come on, America. It's Herschel Walker. I mean, I wouldn't trust that guy to like walk to the corner store and like pick up some groceries. Like, he cannot be a senator. He just can't be a senator.
I just can't wait for, you know, you and I watch Archer. So it's like Raphael Warnock can put together a sentence and is smart and kind and a reverend. And the other guy has like a new mystery child surface every week and can't put together a sentence and thinks you scrub air with a brush, and it's close. It's made in Georgia. Like, yeah, only in Georgia can this kind of thing happen.
Well, maybe Florida, maybe Arizona. Okay, with that, we got time for one more story for our first hour. So good news for someone, but not us. Let's talk about this now. Hey, what do you know? Oil companies are doing well. Shell, in fact, breaking records. They posted record profits this week for a second straight quarter. Isn't that nice for them? Their profits rose to $11.5 billion from $5.5 billion. That's over a 3-month period. And I can't stress this enough. I'm not talking about their revenue. I'm talking about their profit. Every single dollar in profit that they got there, they could have not gotten and still maintained their record profits from last quarter, but gas prices would have been cheaper. That's a possibility. They chose not to do that. And thus they've brought in several billion dollars in profit per month. Isn't that amazing? And they're gonna use it, by the way, to buy back $6 billion in shares, underlining their healthy cash position. It's so healthy that they can buy billions in shares. Not healthy enough to lower the price of energy to you, though. By the way, that might seem impressive for them. Good job, Shell, but they're kind of broke bitches. Exxon made $17.9 billion in profit. But don't you dare say that they're profit gouging. And what would your evidence even be? That they're making record profits and that you're in the middle of being gouged? That you can feel the blade entering your stomach? That don't make it a profit gouge. By the way, and this is so fun. Thank you, Jordan, who has a great piece up on his personal site about this. Chevron's effective tax rate last year was 1.8%. Exxon's was 2.8%. So Chevron whooping Exxon right there. But either way, they are getting away with literal murder because, you know, it kills people when their product is burned. But with all of that, we're getting like a couple cents every few days in a drop in price, Brett. They're making so much money as we continue to suffer.
Here's what happened. I mean, Jessica Burbank has on TikTok, she had in Instagram, she has a video. It's kind of a sketch where all the different players in the price of oil are at a table talking to each other. You should watch it. It's very informative. But like the take on it is the oil companies, people didn't drive during the pandemic and they're like, oh, darn, that people didn't buy as much gas. And then when people started driving, they just were like, I'm gonna keep charging as much as I can. And there's a lot of other factors that go into it and creating supply and whatnot. But like my take on it is like, they just were like, I'm gonna charge as much as I can for as long as I can until the Fed shows up and everyone shocks the market with some interest rate changes and fears of recession and all of that. And then they'll recover. And what's hilarious is the other side of the coin is now that gas prices are correcting back to where they probably should be, even though they're still wildly more expensive than they should be given the price of like crude oil. The Republicans are just like, I'm not gonna talk about it. I'm just gonna say generally inflation, even though
price of gas that.
Yeah, it's part of that.
Yeah, how much was Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Greene talking about gas prices? And then immediately having to backtrack when people would bring up literally anything that could be done to lower the price. They weren't interested in lowering the price. They were interested in the price being high. And it is still too high, let's keep it real. But it is down like 65 cents from 1 month ago. It's dropping a couple cents every day recently. On our pre-shows, we give the rundown of the COVID numbers and the gas price numbers on every single show. And suddenly they're not so interested. Look, I personally felt like it was unfair to say that it was Biden's fault when it went up. So I'm gonna be consistent. I don't think that he's singularly responsible for it going down. But they did think it was singularly his fault when it went up. So ergo post overhawk, it must therefore be his responsibility and thus he reaps the rewards, I guess. And that seems to be the case in the polling that we talked about recently.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're gonna have to close it out there. I do wanna say though, Mary, who just became a tier three member, thank you for that. I look forward to seeing you in our members hangout. Just gave one of the most generous super chats that I can remember in the history of the channel and says, I don't know why I waited so long to join. Thank you for being here. I really do appreciate it. Whenever you join and if you need to take a break, I always say to everyone, you gotta maintain your mental wellness and having an unflinching daily focus on the news can be difficult. But thank you so much for being here and we really do appreciate your support of the show and the network. With all that said, thank you everyone on the linear platforms and the podcast for being here. If you're on other platforms though, we've got a lot more to talk about, including our Garbage People of the Week. So don't go anywhere, we'll be back in just a few. Justin, I'm only gonna read this one out loud to bother Brett, says, John, that hair, damn sexy. And hi, Brett, looking handsome like always.
I think you look fun. I think you look fun. I was gonna say effing great.
Well, thank you. I'd prefer fun.
Ha, John.
He said you were handsome too, buddy. Okay, everybody's handsome. We're all pretty. Candace Lynn gifted 5 subs over on Twitch. That makes 11. Thank you, Candace Lynn. One Savage Gentleman gifted 5, has given 45. Thank you so much. Brandy Lou 2 gifted 5 as well, has gifted 820 subs on Twitch. We have such an amazing community. Thank you to all of you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.